Good morning, everyone. This is Dennis, mailbox 3030. We're doing our health report for today. And today is still October 30th. For a happy Halloween to all of you. First article is talking about the quality of food and beef raised with antibiotics and stuff. It said fast food chains are among the biggest purchasers of poultry and beef in the U.S., so when they make changes, it has ripple effects through the entire industry. One change that's needed is reducing the use of antibiotics in healthy animals to prevent disease and instead giving the drugs only to animals that are sick. This overuse is a major contributor to the development of antibiotic-resistant infections in people. Fortunately, the fast food industry has made improvements. 18 of the top 25 chains serve, or have plans to serve, only chicken raised without medically important antibiotics, according to Chain Reaction IV, an annual report from Consumer Reports and other consumer groups. This is a great step towards reducing the threat of antibiotic resistance, says Gene Halloran, Director of Food Policy Initiatives at Consumer Reports. But with the majority of antibiotics sold to the meat industry going to the beef sector, greater progress could be made if restaurants serve no antibiotic beef. McDonald's recently made a commitment to monitor and reduce the use of medically important antibiotics in its beef supply chain. Now Consumer Reports is calling on Wendy's, the third largest U.S. burger chain, to keep up the momentum and do the same. The company already serves chicken raised without medically important antibiotics and has taken modest steps to reduce the use of one antibiotic in its beef supply chain. We're asking Wendy's to help keep antibiotics working so that they are there when we need them, Halloran said. It's a little inset about controlling bad cholesterol. In a study of 165,411 people, over half of those prescribed statins for high cholesterol didn't reach optimum levels for low-density lipoprotein, which is the LDL number. That's the bad cholesterol. Within 2 years of treatment, and were more likely to experience a heart attack or stroke in the following years. Some people have trouble sticking with statins, which could partly explain the results. The research say genetics may also play a role. So just another brief thing. In a sounder, safer sleep, in a recently published study of 392 obese women and men with severe obstructive sleep apnea, those prescribed a positive airway pressure machine such as CPAP had a 62% lower risk of dying over the next 11 years compared with those who weren't prescribed one. There you go. A six-year study of 31,000 adults by Tufts University found that taking supplements wasn't linked to a lower risk of death during the study period, but that getting enough copper, zinc, magnesium, and vitamin A's and K's from food was. High doses of supplemental calcium, 1,000 milligrams or more a day, were tied to a slightly higher risk of death, as was vitamin D supplementation, more than 10 micrograms. People whose blood levels of the vitamin were already adequate. Nutrients seem to work together and interact in complex ways in whole foods, for example, and that interplay may shape health more than levels of any one individual nutrient. And finally, just a brief thing. This is food for your heart. Replacing red meat with nuts, soy, legumes, rather than fish, poultry, or carbs is a better way to help your heart, according to a recent review of 36 studies involving 1,800 women and men ages 18 to 70. The soluble fiber, good fats, and antioxidants in plant-based proteins may account for their heart benefits. Plus, they don't have the high cholesterol and saturated fat often found in red meat. So here's an article that always also hits close to home. It says, "Why am I so tired?" It said, "Surprising new findings on fatigue and what you can do to feel more refreshed." Many older adults feel fatigued and often cite this pervasive feeling of tiredness as the main reason they limit their activity. In turn, being too exhausted to see friends or go about your usual activities can mean a decreased quality of life. Such fatigue has long been dismissed as an expected part of aging, but experts are beginning to push back on this idea. "I don't think that's an adequate explanation," says Basil Elda, a PhD program officer at the Division of Geriatrics and Clinical Gerontology at the NIH. As scientists develop a deeper understanding of what aging is biologically, he says, it has become clear that it's no longer accurate to attribute such symptoms simply to age. Meanwhile, as the research evolves, here's what you need to know about the possible underlying causes of fatigue, as well as strategies to help boost your energy. Imagine that you ask two women the same age how tired they were over the past week. If they both rate their level of fatigue at 7 out of 10, you might conclude it's their age. Research that measures fatigue has historically asked this kind of question, Alda says, but it's missing something critical, and that is context. One of those women may be run down after a week of dealing with chronic health problems and has been too tired for social engagements. The other is also spent, but only because she has gone cycling every morning and dined with friends every other night. Now some researchers are shifting their focus from studying fatigue, how tired people are, to studying what is called fatigability, the level of tiredness people feel in the context of the activities that they do. They hope that this not only gives a more comprehensive measurement, but also eventually helps unearth more about what can cause and solve this type of exhaustion. Jennifer Schrack, an associate professor in the Department of Epidemiology at Johns Hopkins, has helped develop new ways to measure fatigability. By having people walk at the same slow pace on a treadmill, for example, she can determine how tired different people get from doing the same task. Eventually, she says, doing these sorts of tests over the course of many years will help reveal how people tire differently as they get older. While researchers hope to uncover new aspects of fatigue in older adults, certain conditions are already known to cause severe tiredness in people of any age, even in those who are well-rested. These include anemia, heart disease, chronic lung disease, diabetes, and other endocrine disorders such as hypothyroidism, and adrenal insufficiency, kidney disease, liver disease, bacterial or viral infections such as the flu, rheumatological conditions such as rheumatoid arthritis and lupus, and neurological conditions such as multiple sclerosis, concussion, and stroke. Some of these conditions come with a multitude of troubling symptoms, but in others, such as anemia, unrelenting fatigue may be the first clue of something that is not right. Fatigue is a common and often unrecognized symptom of depression, and it has been linked to anxiety, stress, grief, and even boredom. Cancer survivors also seem to tire more easily than others who are the same age, Schrack says, even years after remission. Many common medications, including antihistamines, beta blockers, and benzodiazepines, can cause fatigue. There is also what's called deconditioning. Being out of shape can result in your getting fatigued more easily. Age itself is not a cause of fatigue, but there is a lot of data to show that with advancing age, there seems to be this greater kind of inflammatory state some people have called inflammaging. This increase in baseline level of inflammation can relate to fatigue, and researchers are looking into why this may happen with aging. A slightly elevated inflammation state could, he says, be a sign of the disease is brewing, but has not yet reached the clinical level required for diagnosis. That's one reason it's especially important to talk to your doctor about persistent fatigue so that you can keep an eye on it. Certain conditions that cause fatigue require a treatment plan developed with your doctor, but for many, simply becoming more active can help, Schrack says. Just remember that trying to suddenly exercise a lot more than before might not be sustainable. Instead, Schrack says, try increasing your activity just a little bit each week. It doesn't have to be traditional exercise, she says. Gradually trying to spend less time sitting can help. Incorporating activity into your regular life, say walking to the store instead of taking the bus or raking leaves, may be easier to stick with than doing workouts. Think of it as breaking up sedentary time within the flow of your day rather than as a task you have to go out of your way to do. Schrack also suggests making sure all your doctors know about all your medications. If you see several specialists, they may not be aware of all the medicine you take. Telling your doctor means they can better understand and better help you to navigate side effects such as fatigue. Limiting caffeine, alcohol, and high sugar and fried foods can also help. ASCAN, making sure you stay hydrated throughout the day. If you're frequently bored, consider participating in a free activity in your community or looking into ways to parlay your knowledge, skills, or experience into volunteering. And there's a little inset here. It says, first things first, get some Z's. It says, many causes of fatigue are unrelated to sleep, but if you're not getting enough sleep or you suspect that your sleep might not be high quality, trying to improve it should be the first thing you do, whether it helps, to see whether it helps. And here are some places to start. Number one says, set a bedtime. Sleep research strongly suggests that going to bed around the same time every night and waking up around the same time every morning can help. Secondly, it says, light up your day. Exposure to blue light during the day is key to feeling awake. This type of light, ideally from the sun, though also from screens, tells your brain to suppress the hormone melatonin and lets you feel alert. Remember to use sunscreen if you'll be spending time outdoors. Thirdly, it says, avoid blue light at night. For the same reason, try to avoid screens at nighttime. If you need to use a computer or smartphone, installing programs like Flux, dimming screen brightness, using features such as night shift, or wearing blue-blocking glasses may also help to reduce exposure to blue light. It says, get your eyes checked. While different studies have found different results, it may be that if you have cataracts that haven't been removed, they could be reducing the necessary blue light you need during the day, thereby disrupting your sleep. It says, consider sleep apnea. You may also want to ask your doctor about sleep apnea, which often occurs more often in older adults and is marked by snoring and reducing of absent breathing. It's generally treatable with a CPAP, continuous positive airway pressure machine. And finally, it says, limit daytime naps. Long, regular naps may make it harder to fall asleep at night, which sort of makes sense with that. Shingles seems to be in the headlines an awful lot. Again, for those of us who had chicken pox as a youth, we thought we were safe from it, but evidently that's not the case, and have had to go through the two-step shingles injection process over the past couple months. So it says, what to do about shingles? And says, don't neglect the important vaccine. If you had chickenpox as a child, you might think the disease is behind you, but the virus that causes chickenpox, varicella zoster, can remain dormant in the body and resurface later in life, causing a sometimes debilitating condition called shingles. It affects up to one-third of adults, according to the CDC. Older adults are more likely to get shingles. Most cases occur in people 50 and older. At first, shingles causes a painful blistered rash that usually goes away in a few weeks. But the older you are, the more likely the condition will cause post-therpetic neuralgia, which is PHN. Severe pain in the area of the rash that can linger even after the skin problem clears up, sometimes for months or years. Treating this pain remains a medical conundrum, says Catherine Dooling, a CDC medical official. That's why the best strategy is to protect yourself from getting shingles in the first place and by getting vaccinated. And here's what you need to know. How to prevent it. Because the condition is caused by a virus that's already inside of you, the only way to protect yourself is by vaccination. There are two shingles vaccines, Zostavax, available since 2006, and Shingrix, Rix, that's Shingrix, approved in 2017. The CDC recommends that people ages 50 and older get two doses of Shingrix 2 to 6 months apart. It's more than 90% effective at preventing shingles, and studies suggest the protection is long-lasting. Zostavax is only 51% effective. You should get Shingrix, that's again Shingrix, even if you're not sure whether you had chickenpox, and even if you already had the Zostavax vaccine or shingles itself, the CDC says. Check with your doctor about how long to wait after a bout of shingles to get the vaccine. Serious adverse reactions to shingles vaccines are rare, according to the CDC, but the side effects of Shingrix tend to be a little more bothersome than you might experience with other vaccines. A study in 2019 reported that 24% of the people who had Shingrix developed a fever, and about 20 to 23% had redness or pain at the injection site. And I will tell you, I had both of those for that. Fatigue and muscle aches are also possible. Dueling recommends taking it easy the day after getting a shot. Side effects generally go away within a few days. So how to treat it? Three antiviral drugs are available to treat shingles. Acetaclovir, which is Zovirax and its generics. Famciclovir, which is Famvir and its generics. Ervalisciclovir, which is Valtrex and its generics. Treatment is most effective if given within 72 hours of the first symptoms, so see your doctor immediately if you think you may have the disease. Antiviral drugs can lessen the severity of the pain from the rash and help it heal more quickly, though it's unclear whether they can reduce the likelihood that you'll develop post-therapeutic neuralgia, according to Dueling. Different types of drugs have been found to help ease post-therapeutic neuralgia pain in some patients. They include anticonvulsant medications such as gabapentin, which is Neurontin, or generics, tricyclic antidepressants such as amitriptyline, which is Amitid and its generics, and a recently approved lidocaine patch, which is Zitileto. But then it also notes a vaccine shortage, which again is another thing that I experienced with this. It says, because of a Shingrix shortage in the U.S., this preferred shingles vaccine may not be easy to find. The manufacturer is steadily shipping supplies to healthcare providers, but the wait may still be weeks or months. The CDC has a vaccine finder tool at vaccinefinder.org that can help you. Just be sure to call the doctor or pharmacist before you head out to make sure Shingrix is really in stock. Y'all can also ask whether he or she can call when it's available or whether you can be put on a wait list. The CDC recommends two doses of Shingrix, 2 to 6 months apart. If you can't find a second dose within 2 to 6 months after getting the first, however, there's no need to restart the series. Just get it as soon as you can. My wife and I had put our names in at Walgreens, and I'm going to say it took 6 months to get the first shot, and it was about 2 months to get the second shot for that. I've had flu shots every year. I've had an awful lot of shots over my career here, and that shingle shot, it can be a bit painful. It's noticeable, and the whole business of just feeling a little bit out of sorts for the next day is indeed what I had experienced. But the payoffs for not getting shingles are well worth 24 hours of a sore shoulder and feeling a bit out of sorts. So again, I would highly recommend this based upon people who are much smarter than me telling me that that's the way things should be. There's an article, I'll often enjoy the homeopathic aspects of things, as the healing power of nature. Spending time in a forest, park, or even your garden can bring big benefits for your well-being. Experiencing nature isn't just a good way to enjoy the summer. A growing body of research shows that spending time outdoors can improve your health and reduce mortality. Even short nature breaks can be beneficial. According to a recent small study, people who spent 20 minutes in a place where they felt connected to nature experienced a drop in stress hormones. And nature's effects don't require time spent in pure wilderness. Even caring for the potted plants on your windowsill may be good for you. We often think about access to nature as a perk, but you should start thinking of these experiences as a necessity that we need to maintain and sustain healthy lives. A 2017 review found research that suggested links between 20 health benefits and spending time outdoors, including better sleep, reduced depression, increased social connectedness, improved recovery from surgery, reduced obesity, and better health for cancer survivors. Another review found that exposure to parks, forests, and other green spaces was associated with reduced mortality from heat stroke, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes among older patients. Any natural environment may provide therapeutic effects. For example, people have traditionally traveled to the sea or to other sources of water for healing purposes. There are four primary ways that nature may boost your health. First, it provides a buffer from air pollution, noise pollution, and heat, all of which are linked to a higher risk of chronic disease. Second, nature, whether it's a tree-lined street or a forest, provides a chance to be physically active, which can improve health in a number of ways, especially by lowering the risk of cancer and cardiovascular problems and by improving mental health and cognitive function. Third, nature provides opportunities to socialize with friends, which is associated with improved health. The fourth way may be more interesting. Nature may improve health directly by helping people recover from stress and restore their focus. That benefit may help explain the long-term reductions in chronic disease that have been linked to nature. And then it says, a little bit goes a long way. While a mandate to get outside may bring a variety of health perks, it can also seem difficult to achieve, especially if you live in an urban area and have problems with mobility. But it doesn't have to be so daunting. In a recent study which demonstrated that 20 minutes in nature might be enough to affect stress hormones for some people, participants were allowed to choose any outdoor location that made them feel connected with nature. For some people, that meant just stepping outside a building and into a place with a clear view of the sky. Choose the nature experience that's accessible and therapeutic for you. Even if you can't get outside, there's evidence that looking out a window or even viewing scenes of woodlands and meadows on a computer screen may do some good. If you want to maximize the benefits of nature, try to experience your outdoor space without distractions like a cell phone. It's really about being present with whatever version of nature you find yourself with. And last, start small. Even people who love nature may not engage with it as much as they think they do or as much as they should. It's recommended that beginning to commit to spending just 5 minutes every day in a space connected to nature. As I say, there's nothing like being in the great outdoors and just listening to the fresh air and the birds and running water and the sort of the cumulative effect for feeling better about things. It's a good way to do. Well, that brings a close to our health report for today. Again, if there's ever anything that you'd like me to find out more about or you're interested in, I'll be glad to research. This is your report, not mine. I'm happy to do whatever it is you need. So I wish you a healthy and happy Halloween. As always, be well. Take care of yourselves, and I'll talk to you soon. Thank you.